Okay, so this is take two of something that I did a couple hours ago. And let me tell you, boys and girls, before we actually do the real intro, when your mom and dad said do it right, they were right. I tonight thought, I'm going to take a little shortcut and just record locally on my machine. And the first cut of this was completely destroyed. Do it right. So I've hooked up the interface for the show, my mic, I have begged for more time, and this is all working out. But now it's late at night, so you might get the late at night edition. That doesn't mean porn, so don't get excited. Anyway, this is a show bonus. So, show bonuses are not part of a regular episode. They are downloaded manually, because we got to give you a reason to go to our site from time to time, other than commenting. And today we're going to be talking about the top 10 things that grind people's tails, but this time we're going to talk about it with Nuka. Say hi.
Hello. It's unfortunate because we had such a good take the first
time. We really did.
Rebottle that magic.
You know what? I'm not going to fake anything, but I think everything that we're going to go through is super fascinating. And what that stuff is I'm going to recap here in just a second the list we got from the episode, and then we're going to go through your data and see how they compare, which you might be surprised. So, on the episode, which is currently airing, the final list of things that grind people's tails go in, not in any particular order than other than email, was pop you for worship, artists who don't accept deadlines of any kind, special snowflake syndrome, trolling, tolerance or lack thereof, meaning I have an opinion, someone else has a different opinion, and I'm not going to agree with you. Scapegoating or making a particular group a victim. Drama. Sexism. Marijuana use as a social lubricant rather than alcohol or other things. And the fakers slash posers slash people who use the fandom but aren't into it. Now, you were sharing about how that compares to your list, Nuka, so share that with us.
Yeah, so when I was initially hearing the idea for this topic, I thought, oh, we've got some data that should match up pretty well with that, this idea of what really grinds to your tail. And upon sort of re-looking at the data, I recall now that the question that we asked was slightly different. So we got some different answers from our own data, and it's not because those things that you've collected aren't true, but rather the question that we asked wasn't what grinds your tail, but rather it was this question, what are some things that have made you seriously consider leaving the furry fandom? So the kinds of things in your list tend to be anecdotes from furries who are talking about kind of annoyances or kind of little nuisances, whereas the things in our list tend to be the much bigger things. Like these aren't just little annoyances, but like, this has made me at some point want to pick up and leave the furry fandom. And this data is coming from our IARP's ongoing longitudinal study. So in your case, I think you had about 10 or 12 emails. Mm-hmm. In our case, we're talking about data from about 450 furries who wrote in these very lovely answers, and we've gone through and tried to kind of code or group them together. So when a group of answers kind of clustered together around, they're all kind of tapping into the same point, we kind of extracted what do they all have in common. And that's how we can sort of figure out what percentage of each of these responses people tended to provide us.
Right. And you were saying that the kind of information we have is, did you call it qualitative?
Yeah, so the distinction between qualitative data and quantitative data. So qualitative data tends to be a small number of people, and it's really focused on getting that rich experience. So your answers most likely resonated with a lot of people listening because they've got all that rich data that people go, oh, I know exactly what that's like. You know, that you put it in just the right words. Whereas in the data that we're doing, even though it started off qualitative, we collected sort of words and you know, like long answer responses from people, we sort of extracted the common elements from them. So they tend to come across a little bit less deep. They tend to be sort of broader, more abstract representations of the problem rather than a very personalized sort of account that people can sort of identify with. So these problems tend to be more aggregate rather than idiosyncratic and personalized.
So I think the way that we were talking about it is that someone says, okay, I like I like chocolate chip ice cream, or X is what I think what I said originally. And then someone else says, I like ice cream with chocolate. And that's those are the words they put down. And you have to convert that into apples. And so you can do apples to apples comparisons, which in a lot of cases, numbers.
So I would extract the, well, they both like ice cream element. So you lose some of the nuance in the responding. Some people like chocolate, some people like chocolate chip. But you can extract the broader concepts from these responses. That's right. Kind of what we did.
Starting off with number 10.
It's kind of broad. It's this idea of negativity. So this is the common thing that we extracted from the responses. So negativity in this sense is really tying into furries with negative attitudes about the furry fandom. So these are cynical furries, or these are furries who say things like, oh, furries ruin everything, or, you know, why would anything nice happen in this fandom? Oh, this fandom's been going downhill for years. So furries have sort of a very almost self-hating or very critical view of the furry fandom. And you can see why this might be very off-putting for a lot of people, because when you first get into the fandom, you got these rosy glasses on. The fandom's a wonderful place. And it doesn't take long from people repeatedly ripping on the fandom and making it sort of this negative place before you kind of say, well, this isn't very much fun. You know, I got into this because it's a fun, wonderful place to be, and I'm being told by people in the fandom that it's kind of crap. And so you can sort of imagine how that negativity would sort of take away from what you were there for in the first place.
Right. Right. I wish I had something profound to say, but I think I'm just going to say number 9.
So number 9 is bullying. And this is sort of an interesting twist, because a lot of the research that we've done on furries tends to focus on the bullying that furries receive from outside the fandom. So furries with a history of being bullied, or furries sort of being picked on in their day-to-day lives and retreating to the fandom for sort of refuge. But in this case, this is bullying that's coming from within the fandom itself. And so this is furries who said that some group or some facet of the fandom was picking on them or making them feel bad. And driving them to leave the fandom, which is quite unfortunate if this is the place you've turned to get away from bullying in the first place.
I think it's a little different than what most people were expecting, because bullying, you often think of the one-on-one, right? Like the kid getting pushed down in the playground, or being harassed at work, or something like that, where this is more of a group kind of digging on another group. At least that's how I can tend to experience it.
Yeah, so when we talk about bullying, yeah, you're right. It's not necessarily someone kicked me over and took my lunch money. It's things like the fandom's supposed to be a place for inclusiveness and acceptance, but now I'm being picked on baby furs, or for being bronies, or for being members of these more stigmatized facets of the fandom. And so you can imagine how it takes a toll on a person to be picked on when you sort of turn to the fandom initially for, you know, being a furry itself is being a member of this sort of ostracized, picked on group. And now that you've found refuge in it, you're getting picked on again from these people who are supposed to be the ones who should understand you most. And so you can understand why some people would be driven to say, that's enough, I can't take this anymore. This place sucks if they're going to treat me like that. And it's not always group on group. Sometimes it was just sort of little idiosyncrasies of specific groups. So you'd say, my local group, just the people in my local group, some incident happened or whatever, and now they're picking on me. I just don't like my local group anymore. And since they're the only furries that I get to see with any kind of regularity, I'm out of here.
And you know, it's something that I wish, I don't wish was in our fandom, but I wish was unique so that other places would be safe. But I mean, and I don't believe you have data on this, but I know that like the BDSM community has this problem. The pup play community has this problem where it's like this one subgroup tends to be the one that's picked on, you know, and it's not like everyone can just get along. It's there's that one person who you just got to throw everything at, or that one element that you throw things at.
Yeah, we certainly don't think it's unique to the furry fandom. I mean, within any groups, there's always power plays, and there's always some groups that are sort of more preferred or elevated over others. We're hoping to, this year, in fact, at one of the conventions we're doing research at, to actually study this, so to actually get the numbers on this and see, because in the past, we've only ever asked about bullying from without or outside the fandom, and it would be nice to sort of have some comparable data to see, well, how often is this happening in the fandom itself? Just so that we're sort of aware of the prevalence rates, and maybe if we know how much it's happening and where it's happening, we can, as a community, work towards maybe reducing it.
So without that data, then you can't really make a conclusion on is the bullied person becoming a bullier? Is that right?
Yeah, it's you need to ask within the same survey both do you bully and have you been bullied? And actually, a lot of bullying surveys ask both of those, and so it's entirely possible to test for that. We haven't yet, although again, on the one of the upcoming surveys this year, we're hoping to test just that. So hopefully we'll have more information in a few months.
Number 8.
Okay. So this one is lack of time or distance. This is perhaps the most pragmatic or practical reason. So people leaving the fandom, not because they're getting picked on, not because of anything in particular, but just because I don't have the time anymore. My job's getting in the way. I've got a family to take care of. Or just a distance thing. Like, you know, I can't make it out to cons anymore. Maybe I've moved somewhere where there aren't any furries around, so I'm kind of leaving the fandom for that reason. So this reason doesn't really line up that well with your initial list of things that kind of grind your tail. This is one of the sort of more unique ones to our specific question, which was what's made you leave the fandom or made you think about it. So, yeah.
It sounds like you're saying people grew up, but at the same time, there's the distance thing. And so I struggle with that because I admit, I really have a hard time because where I live, most of my friends that I want to go and hang out with and drink with and be social with, they don't live here. Like, I've got a few. Comparatively, though, I've got way more friends in other cities. But at the same time, I don't feel like I want to leave the fandom because I have to pay rent and report to work tomorrow and all these other things.
Yeah, I'm actually in the same boat, too. I went from Waterloo in the Ontario Furries, where there were literally hundreds or well over 1,000, I think, at this point, to the middle of Iowa, where there are a smattering of furries throughout the state. And so I definitely understand the feeling of isolation from the fandom, the feeling of, you know, yeah, there's, you know, there aren't any local meetups to go to. And it can kind of make you feel like you're getting sort of distant from the fandom. So yeah, it's not necessarily a matter of I've grown out of this always. It can sometimes be life happens sometimes and it just makes it hard to have the resources or the time or be in a convenient place to devote to the fandom.
So the word is travel and go to cons. That's, I guess. All right, what are we on?
Yeah, in those situations.
What are you on, number 7?
Number 6.
6, okay, 6.
Oh, no, sorry, it is 7. 10, I mean 7.
Oh, you lied to me. Okay, 7.
So this would be immaturity. So not immaturity on the part of the person leaving, but immaturity on the furries around them. So this is witnessing behavior from furries that really it's kind of a turnoff to them in the sense the best example I can think of is if you're a gray muzzle or you're a furry who's in their 30s or their 40s, the kinds of things that are relevant and interest to you, the kinds of things they'll talk about, the kinds of behaviors that you'll engage in, are dramatically different from those of, say, an 18 or 20-year-old furry. I really like to use this example of gray muzzles at a convention who they may wake up at 8 in the morning and go have a nice breakfast with a bunch of their other gray muzzle friends and chat about what's happening in their life, chat about their work situation or you know, what's going on with the mortgage or the car or whatever. And they might be griping about the 18-year-old furries who are having a party till 4 in the morning in the room next door. So the mannerisms are very different between the two groups. And there are, at least as you get older, some furries who say, you know, I the things that were appropriate when you're 18, I'm just not cool with that anymore. And given that the fandom is such a young fandom, predominantly late teen, early 20s, it just may not be as appealing to interact with a fandom that's so young anymore when you've changed so much.
It's do you know the name of the phenomenon that has to do with relative touch points as far as history goes? Like, I know that like a lot of people in the 50s or 40s, I should say 50s, I wish 40s were like they all experienced Pearl Harbor together, right? So it was like a thing that they talked about. Does that phenomenon have a name?
We're doing longitudinal research. It's sometimes called a cohort effect.
Okay, yes, yes. Yeah. And I know that, like, as I continue to be this dusty lamp with more dust every day in the fandom in the corner, right, where the party's in the middle of the floor, right? I'm too old for that. that, like, when I try and engage people that are young, like, they use these different touch points, and, like, I'm just completely bewildered by it, and I find it really hard to relate to them. So, like, I'll talk to someone new, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, I got into the fandom because I grew up watching Barney. And I'm like, what? Like, how was that a thing, you know? But for them, it was, like, this huge thing. Or people that are like, oh, yeah, I love dinosaurs because I watch Power Rangers, and I love the Megazord, you know, or something like that. Or where other people are like, oh, I watched Care Bears and whatever Deke cartoon was on. And it's been really hard for me to really want to relate to them, to the point where I'm just kind of like... But then there's also the lack of the emotional maturity, right? So it's like...
Yeah.
Like I don't want to... I know you're going to get over whatever problem you're having right now. It is not a crisis, and life, I promise, will get over it. But they need someone to validate them, right?
Well, to speak to both those points, to the first point, I would agree that there are, you know, generational differences in the furry fandom, even if just in terms of the kind of content that Gray Muzzles will talk about, because what got them into the fandom is dramatically different from what got furries who are just getting into the fandom this year, what got them into the fandom. Right. But that's slightly that wouldn't be necessarily what got furries to leave the fandom, or at least with this point, which is about immaturity. The second point is much more relevant to this, this idea of the emotional maturity, or this idea that what a 40-year-old is going to be willing to put up with, or what they're going to find worthy of complaining about, is dramatically different from what a 20-year-old is going to. So, 40-year-old may be wanting mature conversations, not wanting to put up with stupid, you know, trivial things, or maybe they just don't want to listen to someone complain about, you know, how hard their most recent homework assignment was, which isn't to say that that's trivial for those people, but it's just they're very different focus, and they just may not be interested in a fandom that's predominantly full of people whose interests are dramatically different than theirs.
It's tough. Although, you know, I will say that there are some definite, like, old souls / golden eggs. They're not the same thing, but either or. And you know what I'm saying, though? Or, like they get it? And
yeah.
It's like...
I mean, we're talking in aggregate here. We're saying this is just sort of in general. And we're talking about just a number of furries who said, at some point or another, they looked around and said, you know, the immaturity of some of the people in this fandom kind of makes me want to leave sometimes. You know, this isn't everybody. This isn't everyone in the fandom. This is just, at some point, at least some people, some proportion of our group has said that that was something that bothered them enough to make them think about leaving.
I might be one of those people in that, but I'm not leaving. So, all right, number six.
Now we're on six.
Okay.
So this one's about not fitting in. So as I alluded to earlier, furries come into the fandom with some ideas about what the fandom is, and one of the things that furries are very big on advertising is how open and inclusive and accepting the fandom is, and that's largely true, but you can imagine, because a lot of furries are introverts as well, we tend to be kind of shy, quiet people. We're the kind of people who were on the outsider, ostracized from general society, so at heart a lot of us are introverts. So it can be kind of hard to fit in, to kind of put yourself out there if you're going to a fur meet or to a furry convention. And so a lot of furries feel like even though they put themselves out there, they don't fit in. And that kind of stings even more when you feel like, wow, I don't fit in the group of people who accept everyone. And so a lot of these people were people who've only been in the fandom for maybe a year or two, and they're thinking, you know, it never delivered on that initial promise the way I thought. I thought I could show up and be whisked away into this very social group, and that's just not happening.
Nobody, I'm telling you, like nobody goes to Disneyland, pays the money, the pound of flesh, to get in the gate, and has Mickey Mouse personally come up to them and take them by the arm into this land of fantasy.
Whisk
and
them magic. Away.
Yeah, like, unless you're going to Club 33, and if you are, please take me with you. Nobody is doing that at Disneyland, and the fandom is the same way. And it begs the question of, you know, are people creating or not? You know, like, are you making the fandom what you want it to be, or are you just expecting it to come to you in a nice little box? Because the fandom, I mean, based on that, it's like the fandom doesn't come to you on Amazon Prime. It just doesn't.
If only it did.
Right?
But yeah, I don't want to judge these people. I mean, in the end, if you're a very introverted person and that's just not for you, maybe the fandom isn't for you. But
Sure.
If you're really, really shy and just not comfortable in social situations, so it's not bad or wrong, or you're not a bad person or anything. Just for some people, they come in expecting one thing, and it's just not quite what they were expecting, and it's one of the things that may make them say, maybe this wasn't for me in the first place.
I argue that they should just carve a place for themselves. Make what you want with the fandom. It's you can do anything you want with it. It's really the truth. Anyway, we could rant on that all day. All right.
As I would say, that the data are descriptive, not prescriptive. It can tell you what they say, but I can't tell you what you ought to do.
Right. All right. Number five.
So number five is about conflict. And this is, so the interpersonal conflict specifically, this is kind of a subset of what some might call drama. But this is really the idea that there are people or groups that conflict, and I'm tired of it. I can't deal with the stress or the anxiety that comes from social discord. And this can be anything from two people in the local group just fight and don't get along with each other, or it could be something on a broader level, like our local group doesn't get along with that local group, and we're always kind of fighting, and there's all these arguments and back and forth sort of drama. Or it could be something like, I don't like going to conventions because there's fighting between staff at conventions, and it's just turned me off the furry fandom entirely. So any of these things could be grounds or justification for people saying, you know, I came here to make friends and to be social, not to fight, not to argue with people.
That is something that is, it's severe. It's severe across all kinds of different communities, and it's surprising that that's not higher. I really am surprised, because everyone breaks into these cliques, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, is there a correlation between clique creation and then conflict arising afterward?
You would think, I mean, social identity theory, which is the theory that I primarily work within in psychology, I would say yes. I would, with the subdivision, especially when it's subdivisions that are very similar to one another, the small differences between groups tend to become amplified. Mm-hmm. This is why you get, you know, different Christian sects fight so much, despite the fact that they agree on like 95% of doctrine, because the little differences just get blown out of proportion. So I think you could absolutely get that, where you have a bunch of furries who we agree on 95% of things, but the small little things that we don't agree on just get blown out of proportion, or they become major sort of powder kegs waiting to go off in the fandom. And it's actually a testament, though, to how good the fandom is in many ways. I would almost expect to see more conflict in the furry fandom than you would see in a lot of other groups, precisely because of the fandom's open and accepting nature. Because you have conservatives and liberals and religious people and non-religious people all kind of together in one tent, you would expect to see so much more conflict. And the fact that you don't, you know, or at least that this isn't number one, suggests that, well, I mean, furries are pretty good at keeping the peace, although for at least some, obviously, they would say that it's there enough to drive them away from the fandom.
So we're halfway through the list, and I'm positing the same question because I still think it's absolutely valid, which is it pretty likely that someone might be listening to us and hearing that maybe there's an element of this in me? Because I feel that way.
Yeah, on both sides. It's worth pointing out that this could happen on both sides. So on the one hand, you might be thinking, wow, you know, I've something happened last year and I had this exact feeling that, yeah, that almost drove me away from the fandom. And I think this might resonate with – it certainly resonated with me when I was looking through this data, thinking, yeah, I felt some of these before, and it was it didn't push me out of the fandom, but I certainly, you know, had a week where I thought, you know, why do I keep doing this sometimes? But also on the flip side as well, one of the reasons I wanted to collect this data was to be able to show furries, hey, obviously someone in the fandom is contributing to some of these problems, things like bullying and whatnot. Someone's being the bully. And it's probably not just one or two people, because bullying comes up quite a bit, or because these issues of negativity in the fandom, this furries ruin everything. A lot of furries sort of express these views. So it can be useful to recognize that, let's make sure I'm not part of the problem. Instead of hearing some of these.
Right. Okay, so onward to number four.
So this one's kind of a hodgepodge grab bag of things, all pertaining to sex. So this is the idea that the fandom is over-sexualized, or there's too much porn or too much focus on porn, or it's too fetishy, or maybe there's specific fetishes in the fandom that really bother me or really make me very uncomfortable. And it's worth noting that there was a dramatic increase between sort of the conflict prevalence, the people who said that this was a problem, and the number of people who said that sex and porn was a problem. We see an almost doubling of the prevalence rate of this among people. So as we get into these higher numbers, we're really ramping up how many people said that this was a problem.
I'm imagining a graph where, like, it's kind of a steady, 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 and then whoa! So yeah, so it's kind of like that. So your data, I does it account for cultural differences? Like in North America, people are very uptight about sex because of puritanical stuff. But like in my experience, like people in Europe, it's the opposite of North America, where it's you know, sex is fine, it's violence is the problem. But sex, like having a sexual understanding of life, like sex is healthy, people have sex, it's fine. You know, like do you account for that at all?
So unfortunately, not really. Most of our longitudinal database, which is about 400 to 500 furries, depending on the year, tends to be drawn from North American samples, usually from North American conventions. So we don't really have the data to say there are country-level differences. For the first time this upcoming year, we're hoping to collect zip code data so we can try to look at differences between, say, more conservative parts of the country compared to more liberal parts of the country. But we can't speak just yet to whether it's only furries in certain places or only furries with certain sort of political orientations or whatnot who believe this. And it's worth noting that this isn't necessarily saying that these are furries who say, oh, there's porn in the fandom, I'm out. It more often than not, it tends to be things like, well, I'm okay with the porn and the fandom, I'm okay with the sex, but I'm really bothered by like furries talking about it in public, or I'm really bothered by furries rubbing it in my face, or furries who have, like, you know, I'm okay with 95% of fetishes, but there's that one that just squicks me so bad that it makes me really uncomfortable being in the fandom because they're there. That's the kind of thing that a lot of these were talking about.
It's so interesting to me, because I've always said that one of our greatest strengths as a fandom is we have a very open and accepting understanding of sexuality. You know, we've got gay people, we've got straight people, we've got bicycles, we've got all kinds of things. Like if it's almost like you need to put LGBTQ furry some days. But then there's this that whole aspect of it where it's like, well, it's too in your face or it's too not. And I'm dying to see if you get the zip code data, because I'm curious if there's a correlation between more conservative areas of the country and people saying versus, you know, the more progressive areas where people might be like, oh, yeah, that's just, it's a penis. Ooh, you know, because no, like you go down the street here and you say the word penis at a certain decibel level. And I don't mean screaming, but like, you know, you have a normal conversation like us and you say penis, people are going to look at you and go, oh, you said penis, you know, but like if you do that in like Seattle or New York, people are like, oh, penis, you know?
Yeah.
And so I you could do a whole study there.
Yeah, and hopefully with some location-based data, it'll make it a lot easier to do that kind of study. I mean, I want to avoid judgmental language or this idea of saying, well, don't be so prudish. Or, I mean, for whatever reason, these people just felt that this makes me uncomfortable to be in a group that's this accepting or that puts up with this kind of artwork or this kind of fetish, or where people are this open and outgoing public about their sexuality. That's just a thing. I guess the data don't say this is bad or this is good. This is just what people have said, that they don't, that at some point or another, some aspect of sexuality in the furry fandom has made them go, maybe I don't want to be here anymore.
As long as it's not hurting you or the other person, breathe. That's my opinion, not Nuka's. Okay, number three.
So number three has to do with poor public perception of the furry fandom or stigma. So this is the idea that a lot of furries feel at some points or another, you know, the amount of backlash we get from the media, the number of times I have to explain to people what furry is about and they're giving me dirty looks, I'm done. Like, I just don't want to put up with that anymore.
And it's that ties to that question of, I wish we could see if that was correlating to more conservative versus more progressive areas. I mean, like, my boss knows. Like, it's not like I sit there and go, yeah, blah, 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 furry. Like, he would talk about football or whatever he's thinking about. But he knows. And so I struggle with it because it's like, at what point do you just get over it, you know? Because I understand, like, in my early 20s, I didn't want it out there because you're trying to build a career path. You know, if you're thinking about the future, you don't necessarily want to do something that jeopardizes you getting that promotion or getting that raise. But on the other hand, it's like, you do you, I'll do me, and everyone should theoretically be able to get along. So I struggle with this one.
Well, and you raised a really important point there that I think often gets lost in the mix. So typically when I talk about, say, dispelling stigmas about the furry fandom in the media, and we try to set the record straight, almost invariably I'll get at least one furry who'll comment and say, you know what, furries just need to learn to not be bothered by what the media says about them. Furries need to just be their own person and say, screw what the media says. And my response to that is typically to say, well, it's good that you're in a position where you can do that. And a lot of furries are lucky enough to have supportive families, to have supportive friends, and to be working at a place where if it's discovered that they're a furrier, they have the opportunity to sort of be the first exposure of these people to furry. It's okay that they're furry. But people who work in the military or people who work with children in daycares or schools or people who work, you know, lawyers or public servants, it's a lot harder for them to just say, well, it's okay that the media constantly rips on me for being a furry, because they live in the very real fear that if they got outed as a furry in this job, that could be the end of their career, like right there. And a good sort of example of this sort of happening, it sort of happens to me in my own life, my own work. When I was starting off as a grad student in my department, I decided to put a little furry prize sticker on my door. I was going to be openly furry.
You draw attention, though, that way. That's different. That's like putting a big rainbow flag on your car or whatever, right? Like
yeah, but I had the same attitude of, you know what? I don't have to answer to anyone. This is what I'm going to be, and I'm unashamed about it. And it was a year later when I had several research assistants come up to me and say, can we ask you a question about that? And I'm like, go ahead. And they said, does that mean what we think it means? I said, well, I'm a furry. And they said, yeah, but don't furries have sex with animals? And I'm thinking, oh my God, apparently this was the thing, this was the rumor going around the department. And I'm thinking, oh my God, my work colleagues and my, you know, the people working under me all thought I was doing things with animals for the past year. And I was lucky that I work in academia where this wasn't, you know, something that instantly got me fired or brought before HR or something. But I'm thinking, you know, what if I was working with the police? What if I was working in the military? What if I was a government official? That would have just sunk my career like that. That would have been game over. So I can understand the mindset behind people who say, look, if this negative, these negative stereotypes, the stigma keeps up, I just can't hang around anymore. It's going to drive me out of here.
Do you think that that drives a little bit of that notion of coming out as a furry? I mean, you don't come out as furry. I'm just saying it again because we always say it. But do you think that that can drive that sort of mentality? Like, I'm finally going to tell the world.
I mean, I think you can come out. I don't think you need to. But I think for some people, it may be serious enough that they consider it to be something that they have to come out about. But I would absolutely agree that this stigma certainly contributes to the feeling of I need to come out. This is a big deal. And for some people, it may end up just being the secret that they can't deal with anymore. This idea of, you know, I've had to keep this to myself or my parents or my family. And you know what? I'm out of here. I can't deal with the anxiety and the stress that comes with being a closeted furry, so to speak.
Gotcha. Okay, number two.
So number two is the one that you probably would have assumed would be number one. And I think, in fact, in the first take, you thought that this would be number one, hands down. And there is a considerable increase from the previous one. So there's another big jump up in prevalence for this one, which is drama. And drama is a very broad, very big category, almost necessarily so, because there's not necessarily a consensus. No one necessarily agrees on what exactly drama is. It's like one of those things where we know it when we see it, but we can't necessarily put our finger on a concise definition.
So why don't we just call TNT and ask them? Sorry, I had to do it.
But yeah, it's just the idea that, I mean, some people would just say drama. Like, why did you almost leave the Phantom? They would just say drama. They wouldn't go into more detail. So I don't, in these cases, I don't want to draw too many inferences as to what that could have meant.
Bless you.
But some people certainly said that it was interpersonal drama, not necessarily conflict, like fighting between people. But it could be awkwardness or things like, oh, I dated someone from my local group and we broke up and now they're dating someone else and we're not, you know, fighting necessarily, but it's certainly this awkward kind of rift in the group and I just don't want to deal with it anymore, this drama.
What's the difference in between this and the one group doesn't like another group? I can't remember what you called it, but because those sound like drama. Those are both drama in my head.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that these aren't perfectly what we call mutually exclusive categories. Some people would fall into multiple categories. So if they would say drama, for example, intergroup conflict, they would get a check mark of both of those. So certainly I would argue that sometimes intergroup conflict or oftentimes intergroup conflict would be considered drama, a subset of drama.
So is it just that there were enough responses that it warranted being its own item?
Yeah, so we got a lot of a very eclectic kind of mix of things that fell into this general category of drama, but there was enough of them in the, you know, that were specifically about conflict that it kind of got its own group as well.
I gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so number one, at this very moment I can't remember what it was, but I do know that it's not, no disrespect to him at all, I mean that, it's not Kage, which I really would have thought.
But. Well, and it's worth noting, before we get to number one, that some of the things that Kage talks about that are very divisive, so the idea of what is the role of sex in the fandom, for example, that's covered on here, and we talk about the sex one. So, you know, Kage as a specific, you know, thing that caused me to leave the fandom doesn't really come up, but some of the major issues that make him kind of a divisive figure were present here, so.
All right, I'm going to cue the drum roll. Are you ready? All right, so tell me, what is number one?
Poor behavior from other furs. So this one won out, and it was another very broad category, but the general sense of it was furries acting in socially inappropriate ways. So this ranged from things like being embarrassed at a fur meet because furries were passing porn around and there were, you know, kids around or old people around and furries were showing their porn off, or things like a furry was hitting on me right, you know, when I was standing next to my boyfriend and wouldn't take a hint. So they see furries behaving badly, doing things that just made them feel uncomfortable and make them think, you know what, I don't want to be in a group that's going to behave this badly, that's going to act out in ways that I just don't want to be associated with. And oftentimes it was targeted directly at them, so they behaved badly directly to me, and that really sort of put me off the fandom. But it was also oftentimes, I just don't want to be in a group where this is happening. So maybe I was in a group or at a convention where something happened, and you're like, you know what? I don't want to be associated with this. This is too much.
I struggle with this because it feels like it's – I am not advocating going to the local fur meet at the coffee shop and whipping it out. Or whipping out your bad dragon presents, or, you know, look at my giant iPad Pro, it has a P on it. Like, I get that. At the same time, though, like, when you go to a private event, like, at some fur's house, and everyone is drinking, having a good time, and people are going, oh, yeah, you know, sex, or, you know, not doing it, but talking about it, or, oh, yeah, you know, I would expect that to be there. But this sounds like people are just kind of expecting traditional outside the fandom social norm to just carry straight through.
And that's entirely possible. And I think that that's probably where some of this is coming from, is they have one idea coming into the fandom about what it's about, and then it turns out to be something not quite what they were expecting. And I don't, again, I don't want it to be prescriptive. I don't want it to say these are the people who are wrong and they need to get a better idea of what the fandom is actually about. Because you could turn it on its head and say, well, maybe, you know, we don't have the data on it to suggest, well, what is it, are these things, is it normal to go to a furry meetup and whip out your porn and show it to other people there? Is that what's normal? Is that what ought to be? That's for people to debate and decide. What we can say with our data is that it's the number one reason why some people leave the fandom, not specifically about showing off porn in public, but just in general, socially awkward or socially inappropriate. Cringe is kind of the word I've been thinking about using to label this, is cringe-inducing behavior that really makes you feel uncomfortable when it's happening to you or when you're seeing it happening, that makes you go, I don't want to be part of this.
See, I feel like this is, I'm not using the right term, but like, again, that kind of uptightness that like I see here where I live, but I don't see in other places because of the cultural climate where people are just going to be more like, no, I don't want to be associated with that, where other places that might not be the case. It's killing me you don't have this data, because I'm dying to know.
Yeah, we've been working on getting location data for a while, so hopefully the zip code seems to be the best way to do it. Before we were doing it, we were going to do it at a state level, but a colleague of mine here at Iowa State suggested we do it by zip code because it still preserves the anonymity of our participants, while also allowing us to get a really fine-grained look at political attitudes. So
what are you going to do when you get someone out of the U.S.?
We have options for that as well. So
we have options.
The question, I believe the way it's currently worded is, what is your zip code if you're outside of the U.S.? What country are you in?
Oh, okay. Anyway, that was kind of a sidetracking thing, but it really does feel like it's just like, chill. Like, again, don't whip it out in public. But it's almost, I don't want to compare it to religion, because I don't think it's a fair thing. Like, because there's a saying, right? Like, religion is it's like a penis. It's nice to have one. It's good to be proud of it. But don't whip it out in public and slap it in people's faces. But that's not a fair comparison because of a variety of reasons, right? It's just so. It's hard.
This is where we might disagree. Because I guess my thinking is, no one person gets to decide what the fandom is or ought to be. So when I see people who say, well, they need to get over it and learn this is what's in the fandom, I also see that it's just as fair for people to say, well, how did you get to decide that's what the fandom ought to be, and that that these social rules don't apply here. And again, that's completely outside the realm of science. That's into the realm of opinion and people deciding what's best for the fandom. But I guess I try to entertain both perspectives, at least, and be sort of neutral on that subject.
Sure. Well, then I'm not advocating that someone should be the grand decider. I'm just more thinking, if it's not hurting you, let it be. You do you, I do me. Anyway, we could debate this all day, but I mean, that's for Plato and other people to decide, not us. It's just surprising. It's very surprising to me that is number one. It's not drama. It's, someone was acting in a way that made me feel more or less uncomfortable, that I thought about, see that door over there. I don't know. So we're sitting here at the end of this conversation, and it feels like, oh man, do we have homework as a fandom?
Yes and no. I mean, I'll point out that this data that we collected, I never expected to get published in a scientific data. Frankly, psychologists don't care what bothers furries. Instead, this one was specifically done to kind of help inform the fandom of sort of ways that we can improve as a fandom, or at least be aware. And again, do with it what you will. But hey, when it comes to issues that cause people to leave, if you want this to be a big, happy, inclusive family, it's worth knowing, okay, well, what causes people to not like it here and to want to leave? And in particular, one of the big ones I like to use as an example here is the drama item, because it's very easy for us to trivialize drama, to say, oh, drama, lol, that's the thing that's in the furry fandom, get used to it. But what this suggests is, as much as we kind of trivialize and laugh at drama, it's for at least a chunk of people, it's driving them to the point of wanting to leave the fandom. So maybe we should at least be a little bit aware that, hey, next time you see some drama going on, this could be the thing that pushes a furry out of the fandom. And I think that as the fandom gets smaller, as we, if we lose people, the fandom becomes weaker, I guess. Ideally, we like a big, strong, resilient fandom. That's how we get more conventions. That's how we get more listeners to call-in shows, more more people behind the furry fandom in general. So I think
more Patreon patrons.
Yeah. if the goal is to get more furries involved and to have a more active group, it behooves us to kind of be aware of what's making it an uncomfortable place for some people to be here, what's driving people to just want to be out.
So my big fear, and I'm glad that I'm remembering this because I know we didn't get to this in the first take, which is, does that mean it's worth stepping up? And I know this is purely opinion. Is it worth stepping up and being that asshole that says, maybe we shouldn't do that? Like, maybe this person over here is feeling uncomfortable, you know, is that the call to do that?
Ultimately, that's ultimately, I mean, there's no blanket answer because it depends on what the behavior is, right? I mean, there are certainly times I can imagine where most people would agree, look, maybe that shouldn't be happening, and maybe this person has a point that we should cut it out here, and you know, maybe this is a clear-cut case of bullying. We might say, oh, that's just trolling, but come on, guys, maybe this is going too far. Other times, maybe it's more appropriate to say, you know, maybe this is one of those times where this person needs to learn to grow a thicker skin. And again, there's no blanket rule that I can apply because depending on the circumstances, it's going to fall on one side or another. But I would say that there's certainly nothing wrong with being the person who stands up and says, if we're making someone uncomfortable, if we're making someone want to leave the fandom, maybe we should at least consider, you know, is this what we want to be doing? Is this what we want the fandom to be? And maybe you'll decide that that's what you're okay with. But it's at least worth thinking about if you want to keep the furry fandom well populated and healthy.
Well, yeah, especially because I think most of us are gay, right? So we need external assets.
Well, Zootopia helped with that. I know you're not a fan of Zootopia, but Zootopia certainly helped with an influx of new furries. So. This next year in particular is going to be interesting to see, because it'll be about a year at this point now since a lot of these new furries have come in, to see how they're feeling. Is it what you expected? Are you glad you're here? Is it you know?
Did Mickey Mouse come and get you by the arm? I'm just saying. I mean, can you not picture that in your mind, Mickey Mouse coming up to you like in a Disney ad, which never happens ever? You know, I think it's funny. Okay, well, if there, you got any other final thoughts?
It's going to be a really interesting year for research. I'm looking forward to getting to, because this was a very first foray for a lot of these questions, and I was very pleased that we got such rich data. So I'm really looking forward to taking these as sort of a step one, and then delving more into it. You know, we could do an entire survey just on the idea of what is drama, you know, and look at differences across fandoms. You know, is drama the same thing in the anime fandom, or in the brony fandom, or in sports fandoms, as it is in the furry fandom. So,
okay. All right. Well, that is a show bonus. We hope you enjoyed it. This is the longest one ever. Join us on the next episode, and I'm sure Nuka will come back at some point. So listen anyway and see what happens. Anyways, this has been Tugs, and this has been a For What It's Worth show bonus.